Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9. We're up to text number 29. Aisha. Well, I think I'll just read the Aisha hi brahmano vidvams tapa shila punanvita ari radha ishura brahma mahapurusha samgitam sarvatma sarva bhutatma bhavena bhutesh vantarhitam gunai. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Here is a learned, highly qualified Brahmin, engaged in performing austerity and eagerly desiring to worship the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul who lives within the core of the heart and all living entities. Purport. The wife of the Brahmana did not regard her husband as a superficial Brahmana who was called a Brahmana merely because he was born of a Brahmana family. Rather, this Brahmana was actually qualified for the Brahminical symptoms. Yasya yal lakshana prokdam, the Bhagavatam 7.11.35. The symptoms of a Brahmana are stated in the Shastra. Samo damas tapaso cham, shanti arjvam eva cha, jnanam vijnanam asti gyam, Brahma karma sabhavajam. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness, these are the qualities by which the Brahmanas work. The Bhagavad Gita 18.42. Not only must the Brahmana be qualified, but he must also engage in actual Brahminical activities. Simply to be qualified is not enough. One must engage in a Brahmana's duties. The duty of a Brahman is to know the Param Brahma, Param Brahma, Krishna, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam. Because this Brahman was actually qualified and was also engaged in Brahminical activities, Brahma Karma, killing him would be a greatly sinful act, and the Brahmana's wife requested that he not be killed. Aisha hi brahmano vidvans tapashila gunanvita ari radha ishura brahma mahapurushav samgitam sarabhutatma bhavena bhutesh vantarhitam gunai. Here is a learned, highly qualified brahmana engaged in performing austerity and eagerly desiring to worship the Supreme Lord. The Super Soul lives within the core of the heart in all living entities. Namo Vishnu Upadaya Krishna Prasthai Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Ranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutam Deve Gauravani Vajarne Nirvishesha Srimivadi Paska Kya De Siddharna. In this verse we're instructed that it's not good to eat brahmanas. And especially highly qualified brahmanas. I don't know if they taste better, but it's even worse if he eat highly qualified brahmanas. And who is a highly qualified brahman is explained here? One who has developed the good qualities. Janmana jayate shudra. By birth, in Kali Yuga especially, because this is actually taking place. This is the dynasty of Amshuman, so this is before Kali Yuga. But in Kali Yuga, everyone is born as a Shudra. That is the mode of ignorance. One who identifies with his body and engages in bodily activities is known as a Shudra, one who has no higher conception. And by birth, everyone, especially in Kali Yuga, has no higher conception than I am this body. Janmana Jayate Shudra. And then by samskara bhavat dvija. Then by samskara, by some impression, one can get some understanding that we're different from the body, that there is some other purpose in life other than sense gratification. So that's called by samskara. Samskaras are meant to give us some impression, some taste, some insight into another type of reality so that we can strive in that direction rather than simply aimlessly or endlessly gratifying the senses. And Veda, Panta, Bhagatvija, Vipra, and when one gets an insight into reality beyond the sensory gratifications, then one may study the Vedas to understand these things more thoroughly. And one who has understood the Vedas, he's known as a Vipra. And by applying the Vedas within one's life, one can rise up to the platform of becoming a Brahmana. Brahmana janatiti brahmanaha. That a Brahmana is, by definition, one who's known, who knows Brahma. So we can see, for instance, in the life of Vishwamrita Muni, he underwent austerities for 60,000 years in order to become a Brahmana. He wanted to become a pure Brahmin. It is not so easy, just like in ISKCON, maybe if one is fortunate, he can get Brahmin initiation after 1 or 2 years. So does that mean that we're better than Vishwamrita Muni, who was striving for 60,000 years, meditating in great austerity? Does that mean that after 2 years we're far superior to Vishwamrita Muni? And besides that, he fell down and then had to take up the process again for another 60,000 years. And then he fell down again. And then he took it up for another 60,000 years. So then after 180,000 years, he finally got second initiation. Of course, we're much more merciful in ISKCON. But what is actually second initiation? What does it actually mean? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has gone over just the qualities of different things in the mode of goodness. For instance, work, knowledge in the mode of goodness, work in the mode of goodness, the worker in the mode of goodness, intelligence in the mode of goodness, determination in the mode of goodness, happiness in the mode of goodness. And after coming to the mode of goodness, then one can begin to become qualified, to become situated in the mode of goodness. And what is that qualification? Buddhya vishuriya yukto didatmana niyamya cha shabda din vishaya tyaktva ragadvesha vidasya cha yukta desha lagvasi yatavakkaya manasa dhyana yoga puro nityam vairagya samupashritya ahankara valam darapam karma krodha sisamshritya Kamakrota Purigraham. Vimucha Nirva Shanto Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. So for those who don't know Sanskrit, Buddhya Vishuddhya Yukto. Being purified by the intelligence. Still one has to utilize one's intelligence even after working in the mode of goodness, becoming a worker in the mode of goodness, having knowledge in the mode of goodness, intelligence in the mode of goodness, determination in the mode of goodness, a taste for happiness in the mode of goodness. Still one has to go further, buddhya vishuddhya yukto, purify oneself further with one's intelligence. Buddhya vishuddhya yukto, mano, do you have a Bhagavad Gita? Buddhya vishuddhya yukto jitatmana, jitatmana. One has to control the self. Niyamya cha, with determination. Niyamya cha. Niyamya means following all the rules and regulations. Shabda din vishaya, tyaktva. One has to give up all the objects of the senses. That's known as pratyahara. Tyaktva. Shabda din vishaya tyaktva raga dvesha yudasyacha. Give up all attachment and aversion. Shabda raga dvesha yudasyacha. Vivikta desha lagvasi. One has to live in a secluded place or in the company of devotees. Raga dvesha vivikta desha lagvasi yata vakaya manasa. And very carefully control the body, mind, and the words. Raga dvesha vidasya cha vivikta desha lagvasi yata vakaya manasa dhyana yoga. So this is the progression. This is the Astanga yoga system that's being mentioned. Dhyana yoga puro nityam. Always in trance, always contemplating and meditating. Dhyana yoga puro nityam vairagyam samupashita. And give up all become completely detached from all kinds of materialistic conceptions. Vairagya samuppada, ahankara balam darpam, give up ahankara, false ego, false strength, false pride, all false conceptions of things, ahankara balam darpam, kama krodha parigraham, and all abandon completely lust and anger. Vimucha nirma shando, such a person is certainly liberated, and he comes to the platform of Brahman. So it's not so easy to come to the platform of Brahman. One has to acquire very specific qualities and undergo very rigorous austerities, meditation, to rise up to the platform of actually becoming a Brahman. Then Brahma Buddha Prasanatma Nishoshitina Kangshiti Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Lavate Param. Then one will always be joyful. So if we're not joyful always, we're not quite on the mode of goodness. Joy in distress comes from being in the mode of passion, ignorance. And one who's factually on the Brahma Buddha platform, he's always prasanatma, he's always joyful, because he realizes that he's eternal soul. Therefore, there's nothing to worry about. No worries, mind. That's what they actually understand the meaning of that sloka. And what is the symptoms? There is no shochiti and kangshiti. There's no hankering. There's no lamentation. And one can see all of the entities as spiritual beings, servants of Krishna. Then one can begin devotional service. So from that platform, devotional service, real devotional service, begins. And according to Sanatana Goswami, anyone can come to that platform. It doesn't matter what our birth was. Even when we were born in a lower caste or a lower mode of nature, by the proper process, one can come to the mode of goodness, especially by the process of devotional service. Therefore, he says, Yata kanchanatam yadi kangsa rasa vidana taha. So you can take kangsa, which is not kangsa in the Krishna's pastimes, because it's a different kangsa. This is bell metal. And you can, by an alchemical process, rasa means mercury, vidana taha, by the proper process, you can turn it into kangshatam. That is gold. Vita kanchanatam yadi kangsa rasa vidana taha. So the process is very simple. You simply drink mercury. If you have a thermometer around, you can try out the process. You just drink mercury, and then the next morning you urinate on gold, on kangsa, on bell metal, and then you put it into the fire and it'll become gold. Just think how much money you can make for the temple. How many free books you can go out and distribute. All you need is a few thermometers and you're rich. The only difficulty is it's a little difficult to digest mercury. Matter of fact, most people try to do it, they die. It's a small factor, but the yogis are able to do it because of intense discipline. They have a very strong fire of digestion, even more than a brahmachari. Otherwise, if you try and drink mercury, it's very difficult to digest it. But if you can, then you can make bell metal into gold by that alchemical process. And similarly, tata diksha vidanena jayate rinam. Rasa vidanata. Tata diksha vidanena jayate. Dvijitam jayate nrinam. So in that way, just like, I guess dvijitam, dvija means twice, and twa means just like. So just like a twice-born person, a person can become jayate, a man, nrinam, or a person can become twice-born by the process of diksha. So diksha means not simply the formal ceremony, obviously, of simply getting initiation, changing the name. It's a question of becoming as good as Krishna. Surrender. That when one actually surrenders to Krishna, then one begins the real process of devotional service. But in the meantime, by the process, one can try to make progress in the process of surrender, because surrender is a multifaceted process. As it says, Anukulyasya Sankalpe Pratikulyasya Varjanam Rakshasi Titi Vishvaso Goptrive Varnam Tata Atma Samarth Pakalpanye Shadvida Sharanagati. That diksha or surrender begins with accepting things that are favorable. So if we accept things that are favorable for devotional service, that's also surrender. And if we give up things that are unfavorable for devotional service, that's even further surrender. That's not only material possessions, it's also material conceptions. Except the fact that we're a Krishna servant, for instance, putting on Kunti Mala, chanting japa, shaving our heads, putting on tila. These are all favorable, positive things that we're accepting ourselves as Krishna servants. Then if we give up the conception of being something other than Krishna's servants, that's even further advancement. And then the next stage is that one will have faith that Krishna will maintain and protect one's Krishna consciousness. Then Atma Samartha Kalpanye, one should have no other interest other than Krishna's interests, and always feel meek and humble. These are the different stages of surrender. It is not possible to suddenly surrender completely, although sometimes in rare cases it is, just like Katvanga Maharaj, after inquiring from the demigods, how long did he have left to live? And then he found out he had one moment. Therefore, he decided to surrender. Better late than never. Then he surrendered, came down to the earth planet, and very sincerely started to chant the holy names. But he was an exception. Generally, it's a gradual process, sometimes over many lifetimes, in order to actually, step by step, realize Krishna gradually. Because it's not only a question of our effort, it's also a question of Krishna's mercy upon us, his perceiving our sincerity, and therefore bestowing his benedictions upon us, so that the path of devotional service becomes enlivening and enlightening. But in any case, if one follows the process of diksha, diksha is defined as divya jnana tato dadyat koryat prapasya sankhyana tasma dikshepi proktani. What's the last one? Something. That diksha is defined as the process by which one divya jnana tato dadyat, by which one receives transcendental knowledge. It's the process to help us hear, that's all. So we can hear transcendental knowledge. Divya jnana tato dadyat koryat prapasya sankshayam. And one can understand that he's receiving transcendental knowledge because ignorance is destroyed. And when ignorance is destroyed, then all the tendencies also for sinful activities are also dissipated. There's a whole cycle of, as you probably know, the cycle is explained in extra devotion. From avidya comes what? From ignorance comes what? From lack of knowledge comes lack of knowledge. No? I'm sure that's true. We can't deny that. From lack of knowledge usually does come more lack of knowledge. But from avidya comes bija, the seed of sinful activities, sinful desires. If we don't know who we are, then we'll misidentify ourselves. That's called asmita, the other way of looking at it. And then from sinful desires, which are manifest in rag and dvesha, I hate you or I love you, different manifestations of sinful desires in the material world, comes sinful activities. That's called papa. Sinful activities is called papa. And from sinful activities comes parabdha karma, which manifests itself in aparabdha karma, and the immediate reaction is called parabdha karma. And then from that comes kutam, a tendency to commit more sinful activities. And that manifests itself as further bijam, further material desires. And Prabhupada gives the example in the nectar of devotion that if one commits illicit sex life, you may get, that's called, or one has a desire for illicit sex, that's called bijam. And then if one commits illicit sex, that's called papa. And then the reaction is one may get venereal disease, that's called parabdha karma. And there is also reaction stored up as aparabdha karma for this sinful activity. And even when cures the venereal disease, the immediate obvious reaction to illicit sex, but still there is a tendency towards further illicit sex called kutam, that's further increased, which adds more sinful desires for illicit sex called bijam. So even one cures the disease, but because the desire is still in the heart has increased, one is ever more likely to get the same problem again. And the cycle goes on endlessly. And the cure for the whole problem is to cure avidya, to get rid of avidya. There's a verse that just like fog will be dissipated by the sun, similarly, by the process of devotional service, all sinful reactions, all sinful desires are immediately uprooted. This is in sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So similarly, by the process of hearing, divya gyanat tato dhadyet, if we learn the process of submissive hearing, then gradually the whole sinful desires and reactions will be dissipated. This is also explained in the Bhagavatam as tatara jasta tavo bhava kama lobha dayascheye cheta eta anavidam spitam sadve prasidati. Gradually the modes of ignorance and passion are diminished, and lust and anger and avarice are also diminished, and one comes to the mode of goodness and he becomes joyful, prasanatma. So what is that process of hearing? It means that somehow or another we have to try and hear a little bit the best we can from the right source, and then try to understand what's being said and try to form it into a conception of life, into a devotional conception of life. Not that we're hearing or thinking, oh, that sounds nice, but you know, it's not for me, at least not in this life. So we have to hear very carefully and then try to understand what it means practically for us. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is a very central book because it gives us very central building blocks, foundation of philosophy, by which we can try to see what's applicable to us under our present circumstances so that we can make our lives more devotional, more Krishna conscious. And then when we apply it, the result should be our ability to hear, our taste for hearing increases, that we want to hear more, that we find that it's actually beneficial. It's practical and beneficial, and therefore we become interested in hearing more so we can find out what more we can apply to our lives under our present circumstances. Shushusha shadadanasya vasudeva kataruchi san mahat sevaya vipra punyatirta nishevana. O best of the twice born men, it is therefore declared that great merit is done by serving the devotees, because by such service one gets the taste for hearing the message of Vasudeva. So the taste for hearing about Krishna consciousness is a very healthy sign in Krishna consciousness. It's a sign that we're getting over our materialistic disease. And what is that hearing? Simply to come to the platform of understanding how nice Krishna is, and how nice Krishna's devotional service is, and how nice everyone and everything in relation to Krishna actually is. By understanding these things and realizing them, applying them within our lives, then gradually we become purified and we come to the spiritual platform where we can exist in our real state of being, our real happiness and knowledge and awareness permanently. Therefore, the process, for instance, in our society, we have a certain process, certain etiquette. The speaker sits up on a chair, for instance, this. But it's not that sitting up in a chair, knowledge becomes somehow or another higher. The higher the seat, the higher the knowledge. No, it's simply so that those who are listening can develop some reverence, some respect. Otherwise, if everyone's sitting up and the speaker is looking up, it has a psychological effect on us that we're thinking, well, look at this poor person all the way down there trying to mumble something. What is he mumbling anyhow? Therefore, for the psychology, for our own benefit, therefore the speaker sits a little higher and we have a nice place for the book, to honor the book, to give some respect, because the material world means we respect no one except for our false ego. So therefore, to give a little respect, there is etiquette. There is, for instance, initiation is part of that respect, so that at least we accept some representative of Krishna as our instructor. Not that I accept everyone as my instructor, so therefore I pick and choose whoever I want to give me whatever instruction I want, I have someone who will be prepared to support my desire and give me the proper instruction that I want. Therefore, when everyone's your master, you have no master. Therefore, a whole process is set up simply so that we can hear a little submissively about Krishna and do some service to Krishna in the right attitude. Because it's not a question of just doing some service, that I have to do the service, I don't want to do the service, I hate the service, I hate the people who tell me to do the service, I hate everything about it, but it's the only way I can eat, so what can I do? I've got to do the service. Besides that, if I didn't do the service, my false prestige would be taken away, and what would I be left with? Simply the service. But I don't like the service, so at least let me serve my false prestige. Something is there, but it could be out of love and devotion I'm doing the service just to please Krishna, and I'm in ecstasy doing the service. Doesn't matter what the good or bad that comes from it, but I'm just happy doing the service because Krishna is so sweet and I want to please him. So that's also an attitude. And by choosing the proper attitude, hearing about what the attitude is, and then trying to apply it within our lives, then the result is that Krishna will become pleased and he'll begin to give us the intelligence by which we can make more and more progress to come back to our spiritual realization of life. We can realize who we really are. We can wake up. So when someone says, you know, you're doing very nicely, then we can understand who we are who's doing so nicely. Sometimes people say, oh, you look pretty good. And all you can say is, you know, wow, you must have transcendental vision. I can't see who I am. How did you get such a vision? I have no idea who I am. So one day we can actually find out who we are, and then just desire or agree to do what Krishna wants, then gradually Krishna will reveal to us who we really are, and then our real life can begin again. Rather than this life, whatever our life is, you know, so many varieties of life, so many varieties of mentalities, but the basic principle is come to the mode of goodness so we can understand things more clearly, understand what is our position in this world, how we're being deluded by the three modes of nature, how to accept Krishna's instructions, where they're coming from, agree to serve them, agree to become Krishna's servant, and therefore come to the real position, the real happiness of life. And hopefully there's not some rakshas who will come and eat us. Because, I don't know, he probably would have eaten anyone. He was probably quite hungry. Brahman, no Brahman. Yeah. We'll hear more about him, whether he gets eaten or not. His wife is giving some good instructions to the Rakshasa who's become a king. Don't eat Brahmins, especially qualified ones. But whether he takes them up, we'll find out. So thank you. Any questions?
To keep up all attachment and aversion, obviously one would have to have attained a very high level of transcendence to start with to be able to let go of all aversion.
Or by letting go of one aversion every day, And eventually we'll come up to that process, or at least one a week. Can't do it one a day, or one a month.
It doesn't seem to be as easy naturally as to keep up to that goal of attachment.
No, our idea is by hearing the Bhagavatam, hearing about Krishna regularly, then gradually we can form a spiritual conception of life. And therefore, when these attachments and aversions arise within our mind, we can recognize them for what they are, attachments and aversions, not become disturbed by them. And when we're not disturbed by them, instead we see them for what they are, then Krishna will take them away. Just like a snake, when a snake is wandering by, if you grab it, it'll bite you. If you run away, it'll bite you. If you just sit there or stand there, it'll just go by. It won't disturb you. So when we see the attachments and aversions for what they are, and not be disturbed by them, either attached to them or averse to them, then they'll just go away. They won't affect us. So that art, we have to find out what they are. And then that we have to learn the art of detachment from them, tolerance.
The word, aversion itself, indicates like an excessive detachment, doesn't it? I mean, we detach from sense gratification. Put it this way, the devotee aspires to be detached, naturally.
But we're not averse to it. We're not averse to sense gratification.
As we become attached to Krishna, we become detached from sense gratification. But to become averse to sense gratification is a different thing, isn't it?
Yeah, we're not averse to it.
What is the definition of aversion?
Aversion means we actually have a hatred towards it.
So it's excessively.
Excessive. Krishna wants us to do something, but we won't do it because we don't want to do it. Krishna says, for instance, the Sudama Brahman, he saw he was too averse to sense gratification. Therefore, he gave him opulence so he could serve Krishna with that opulence, and he got over his aversion.
So aversion indicates not just a lack of taste for something, but an excessively antagonistic feeling.
Well, if you have, it's like that. If you have a taste for Krishna, in other words, he doesn't say starve to death. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't say, if you're my devotee, you'll starve to death. You won't eat anything. But he says, I'll offer whatever you're going to eat to me out of love, and then you should take it. He says, be moderate. It's my car, just like with Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami wanted to commit suicide, and Lord Chaitanya began to chastise him. How can you commit suicide? Because that's my body, it's not your body. How can you destroy another person's property? So Sanatana Goswami became averse to his body, but Lord Chaitanya didn't accept that. He said, it's my body. I want to utilize it in different ways. You have no right to destroy it. Prabhupada gives the example that one who's a cashier in a bank, he may count millions of dollars, but he's not at all attached. He doesn't consider himself the proprietor of even $1 that he's counting, that he's using. So he's neither attached to the million or he's excessively detached from it. I hate this money, it's not because it's not mine, I'm just going to burn it. And he doesn't put it in his pocket. Or that famous example of the person walking on the street who picks up the money when he sees it. And another person who just says, I have nothing to do with it. Therefore just leave it there, let it rot. And another person comes along, picks it up and finds the real owner and gives it to him. So we know in the owner of the material energy, we try and utilize as much as possible in Krishna's service, get other people to do the same thing. So we're neither attached to the material nature for our sense gratification, nor are we opposed to the material energy. But we see it should all be utilized in Krishna's service, that's all. Yes.
One of the processes of surrender is accepting favor or rejecting unfavorable things. Then there's potential difficulty to make evaluation of that when also we're trying to avoid attachment and aversion, which is a material thing. How can we evaluate whether it's a material aversion, whether it's spiritually unfavorable, and same as material attachment, or it's spiritually favorable? What would be the same?
Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So one has to study things. One has to be a little thoughtful. Guru, Sadhana, Shastra, and the Super Soul within. If we take shelter of Guru, Sadhana, Shastra, and the Super Soul within, if we follow the process, humbly investigating through those media, then he from within will enlighten us and we'll be able to see things clearly. When we see things clearly, when everything is very clear, then we'll know what to do. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.